Winter seemed to come early in 1313, the year Aurora was born. For days that July, a mass of damp white flakes clung to treetops and roofs like snow. Some thought perhaps it was the North Fairy's doing. They were wrong. In her day, which was a very long time ago indeed, the North Fairy had been known for wreaking havoc on the skies whenever she lost one of her infamous chess games. But she had died many decades before our story begins, mysteriously murdered in her own home. That's why the White Throne, carved entirely from the tusks of narwhals, is now called the Red Throne. It's covered in her blood. Aurora knows the stories well. She's read the entire 313-book collection of fairy histories in her grand library. Princesses have a great deal of time on their hands, after all. Especially princesses like Aurora, who have no sense of touch and no voice. These were tithes from her just months after her birth. But it wasn't snow that came down that summer, for it didn't melt, and it wasn't any fairies doing either. As everyone who was alive then and remains alive today remembers vividly, the ashes that rained over heads and homes and whole towns across the kingdom of Deluce had one very distinct quality, the acrid scent of spindle fire, wet wool, wood smoke, burning hair. 2. Isabel. Mud, murk, dankness and blackness, and bogland and fog, so thick it entered the folds of the mind. This was Isabel's world as a child. Gradually, though, she discovered darkness was not an absence of light, but a living thing, an infinitely tangible substance to roll around in and dig into. She began to fall in love with that darkness, exploring its wells of sounds and stirs. The place was full of dim corners where the king's unwanted daughter could play. The whole estate sits right on a cliff above the mouth of the Strait of Sorrow, whose tide pulls clouds to shore and traps them there, churning and unquenchable. This makes the air briny. It has the vague taste of sardines and the softness of moss. The floors are always slick with moisture. The walls bright, dusted with salt. Over time, Isby learned the feel of every dent in these walls. Every variety of squeak and cry from the floor formed a language. Don't enter. Turn right. Someone was just in here. Or, you are alone. You see, she was blinded at the age of 2, the very day of her half-sister Aurora's christening. Some people consider it a problem, or even a curse, to be forever trapped in darkness. But Isabel no longer minds the dark. Light, too, can be a curse. It can illuminate things no one should ever have to witness. 3. Aurora. The double doors to the library fly open. Aurora quickly closes the Song of Rowan and tucks it beneath her chair cushion as Isby tramples in, shaking snow off her boots. Her knotty chestnut hair is in its usual disarray, her plain blue and white dress torn in at least 2 places. Aurora, on the other hand, believes that a princess is meant to look the part at all times, even if she is merely hiding out alone in her library reading romances. Today, for instance, she is wearing a burgundy underdress, with an overdress featuring a complex pattern of golden birds and deep green vines. She even wears a small hennin atop her head, with a long veil trailing behind it. Did Rowan take full advantage of his stony love yet? Isby asks with a smirk, her eyes fixed on an invisible spot in the distance. She doesn't have to be able to see to guess. This isn't the first time Aurora has been caught in private, agonized rapture over the tale of Rowan and his true love, Umberline, who was turned to stone until 1,000 crows came down and pecked her free. Aurora herself is still waiting to be released in a way. Not from stone, of course, but from the long, silent hours of wandering, trapped in a world where she cannot speak and cannot feel. Will she find true love with Prince Philip of Arben? Even now he and his brother are galloping toward the palace. Ah, good. Some air. That's what this room needs.